Do you want to push the tape in first? No, don't. Oh, God.
There we go. There's going to be a lot of extraneous noises happening.
Yeah, there's two people moving out of our building. It's super crazy hot, so we're not closing the doors or the windows
to eliminate the street.
Yeah,
noise.
We have guests in the house.
But that will make sure that the shade doesn't blow open and knock anything on the floor.
There is that, and that might be a disappointment for some people.
And we have two guests here in the room who are looking at their iPads and phones and drinking coffee, and they may interrupt with commentary from time to time, but we don't know. They're welcome to do this.
One, we could go ahead and mention that one of them is our good friend Christopher Schultz, who is the publisher of Pinups, which is...
If you like art... Mm-hmm. Then you would like pinups.
Yes.
I'm not even going to say that you would have to be a gay, even though it's a lot of naked men.
Yes.
It's a terrific art zine that we think is really great. It's it stands above others.
Yes.
In its... I'm blanking on words to give you because I wasn't prepared to talk about
it. Well, Christopher, where can people find it on the web?
On the web? Yes. Mag.com.
Pinupsmag.com. So take a look. See for yourself. And if it's
not safe for work.
Yes. It's not a clean podcast kind of website. But take a look. See what you think. And Chris, remind you, is also the mastermind behind the As Seen on TV Seth zine.
Oh, that's right. I had forgotten about that.
Yeah. So he's kind of a big deal. People. And he's drinking coffee while we do this show. So, this week's music was selected by moi.
Yeah, you.
Two things. One, I wanted to thank our friend and listener, Douglas,
yep.
who happened upon a great cache of K-singles in his travels and was kind enough to give us a handful of great ones, including the Spice Girls, To Become One. And I was kind of thinking about the Spice Girls this week anyway as a wonderfully poppy, prefab British singing group. Because one of this week's movies is also about a wonderfully poppy prefab British singing group.
Yes, the film that we will talk about first.
Yes, Morgan Spurlock's One Direction, This Is Us, 3D.
It's sort of like Jafar Panahi's This Is Not a Film.
This is not a documentary. In that
this is not a documentary.
This is a commercial.
It is a 90-minute infomercial for One Direction.
Yeah.
Now, let's say, for example, that we have first-time listeners this week who happen to be...
listening to this show just because they saw One Direction in our title.
Ardent One Direction fans.
Completists, if you will.
Hello, One Direction fans.
Welcome.
If you're new to our podcast, this is a podcast about film. It's called Linoleum Knife. It is hosted by me, Dave White, of movies.com, and by you, name your name.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it for me.
Say your name.
Alonzo Duraldi of therap.com and What the Flick on YouTube.
And already, my review on movies.com got held up in a technical glitch until this morning. It's Sunday morning right now. And so
it's September, by the way.
It has not
yet. Do you believe
yet,
it's September?
It has not yet made itself known on the internet very long. Therefore, no one has been screaming at me yet the way they have screamed at you.
Well,
you have already gotten your share of people, One Direction fans, who think that you are a terrible human being.
I've had interactions with two One Direction fans. The first one was very polite. She read my review where I jokingly referred to Louis as the other one because the movie doesn't.
And
relate.
I thought his name was Louis. When they showed his name, they put all their names
right,
on the screen.
Right, but his mom calls him Louis.
Backing up, before this film, neither of us knew really anything.
We knew that was Harry.
We knew that Harry was the one with the hair.
Right.
And that had dated Taylor Swift. Dated Taylor Swift. And that there was that one song about "You Don't Know You're Beautiful."
Yeah, that was all we knew.
That was everything we knew.
So I jokingly refer to Louis as the other one because the movie doesn't really give you a sense of his shtick the way it does with the other ones.
He does get the least amount of personality time.
Like
in the film, he gets the least amount of screen time. If you walk in like we did, not really knowing anything about these guys, you will know the least about him by the end
of
the movie.
Yes, definitely. And so I, frankly, left thinking that Liam was the funny one. But no, it turns out I was informed rather quickly by a fan, Louis is the funny one.
But that was done so politely.
She just pointed it out, and I said, thanks for letting me know. You would not get that from the movie.
And it's
didn't
nice.
Know that going in. And she responded, great, nope, thanks, and I look forward to seeing the film, and good to know.
It's nice to be polite.
Yes.
But it's not as interesting as when you're impolite.
Yes. The other interaction I had with a One Direction fan was with a 15-year-old girl who told everybody on her list to block me.
Well, what, were you going to try to interact with people on her list?
Beats me. And then, what was the other one? It was like...
End him.
End him,
That's my favorite thing ever.
Yes.
End him.
End him. Which I retweeted just because I thought it was funny. But it is funny. But then...
She's great. Whoever she is, she's hilarious.
She stands by her men.
End him.
But then people on my list started going after
her. That should be the name
her.
Of a horror movie. End him.
End him. I like it. The sequel to You're Next. People on my list started kind of going after, and I was like, folks,
that's not fair.
Leave the 15-year-old One Direction fan alone.
Was she 15?
She was 15.
15.
I'm not out here to start beef. But I will say, in my own defense, I don't rag on the band at all in this review.
No, you don't. That's not the point of the review.
My complaint about the movie is that we're getting, I think, you know, even though it's directed by an ostensible documentarian, it is the most sort of sanitized, kid-friendly version of these guys, because they're all like 20-ish.
Well, not all of them yet.
Well, there is, okay.
They're not all.
Well, Liam turned 20 this week, I learned from Twitter.
Yes.
But they're all in that, they're all like 19 to 21, 22-ish, in that range. They're at least in their late teens.
That is something that you should know if you are a first-time listener and also a big One Direction fan. The person who directed this movie is a documentary filmmaker of some, repute. Yeah, like he has a reputation that is fairly good as a documentary filmmaker. He directed that Super Size Me movie where he ate
McDonald's and only McDonald's
three times a day, every day, and just documented the effects it had on his body.
Right. Which apparently no one has been able to repeat. Somebody was telling me that people have tried to repeat his results, and your liver does not give out that fast.
It doesn't.
Apparently not. No. So there may have been some. Who knows?
Maybe he was spiking his McFlurry with some.
Could be steroids. Or
Jack
something.
Daniels or whatever.
But I think people went into this one thinking, okay, you know, I mean, the Justin Bieber movie was directed by the guy who'd done like the first couple of Step Ups or something.
I don't know.
John Chu, and then I don't even know who directed the Katy Perry one. But people thought, oh, Morgan Spurlock's in the One Direction movie, so then maybe this will actually resemble a documentary. It's no. This is a movie made under the auspices of Simon Cowell, who created this band, and who wants you to keep buying their posters and their CDs and all that stuff. And so in no way wants to suggest to a 15-year-old One Direction fan that these guys...
Or a 20-year-old One Direction fan or a 10-year-old One Direction
or
fan.
Or a 40-year-old One Direction fan.
Or a 40-year-old One Direction fan.
That these guys who are, let's face it, famous, attractive, and in their late 20s...
Famous, attractive, in their late teens, early
20s. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say they're having tons of sex. They probably drink a little... Maybe at least one of them smokes. There might be some swearing going on backstage. And some of them might be kind of a pain to work with and maybe throwing an occasional diva fit or just, you know, the things that happen in any band anywhere where they argue about who gets to...
This is recognizable human behavior that everyone takes part in,
more or less. You will see none of this in One Direction.
That is true.
Like, this is... It is as though this were a band... Like, a fictional band that there was a Disney Channel show about is what you get out of this movie.
Yes.
That said, however, these guys are very charismatic.
They are.
They're very camera friendly.
Yes.
They, even if you are getting them putting on a total act of innocence that is not them at all, they come across as convincingly sweet and good guys and hard workers and all that stuff. I got no beef with One Direction. I don't love their music. I don't hate their music. It's not my thing.
I like that first song.
That first song was catchy.
The one about the,
you don't know you're beautiful.
Yeah, I like that song.
It's catchy, totally.
Yeah.
I
don't know any of the other ones.
And they didn't, I know best song ever.
They didn't really repeat. They didn't really perform any of the songs in their entirety.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a ballad that got a lot of screen time. Mm-hmm. They all sat down.
Right, that one.
I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah, and it's funny because I remember when I went back and looked at my What the Flick review of the Katy Perry movie, and I complained that none of the songs were played start to finish.
Yeah.
I didn't mind so much that they didn't play any of the songs start to finish in this movie because
you don't know the song.
Yeah,
and so it's not like you're like, oh, sing Teenage Dream from start to finish.
That's true. If you aren't a bigger fan, you might find that annoying that you don't get an entire song start to finish in over the course of the film. But, you know, I'd say, you know, Spurlock does throw in a few things. It's kind of like, all right, this is a 3D concert film. If you've seen them in concert, you've seen them in 3D, unless if you have two working eyes. So how do I make this, what do I do to make this unique as a film thing? And one is obviously, of course, get real close.
Yes.
But the other thing is, you know, they have these different, every song has a different kind of video animation backdrop going on in the screens. Mm-hmm. And so in the movie, they pull that stuff forward. So if they're playing in front of an old kind of 8-bit video graphic thing, then in the movie version you'll get 3D 8-bit video graphics coming right out of the screen and doing asteroid stuff or whatever right in your face, which is whatever, it's negligible, but it's an effort to kind of jazz up the proceedings and here's something little something different. But these movies are fairly formulaic in terms of the Bieber and the Katy Perry and the Celine Dion. It's sort of like, oh, we love our fans, oh, the grind of the road, oh, the mob outside of the hotel, the wackiness backstage, the tearful phone call home, getting on stage and pouring your heart out. This movie, however, as you pointed out, doesn't manufacture any drama. You know,
I'm waiting for you to stop talking so that I can tell you how the things I'm going to point out. No, you keep finish your point.
No.
Do your thing.
My point is your point. So
finish what you were going to say. All right. Dang, you got a long-winded thing to talk about when don't be sorry. I was just wondering when it was going to end.
That's for many listeners, I'm sure.
Yeah. Neither one of us are the people this movie is designed for.
Right.
This movie is designed for fans. I think, getting back to the original point of you being, you know, vilified on Twitter for it, is that I think a lot of One Direction fans will wonder why film critics are even reviewing this movie.
Right.
Because it is as niche marketed a product as it can be.
Right.
And there is nothing, there's no friction in this at all. There's no drama. There's no the Justin Bieber and the Celine Dion documentaries manufactured a touch of tiny amount of drama by giving them both sore throats.
Yeah, you know, they go to the same doctor in New York.
They went to the same ENT, you know, to get their throat fixed so that they could perform at the big show.
I think the Bieber people figured that none of the Bieber people fans had watched the Celine movie, so they just ripped off the whole
Nobody
thing.
Saw the Celine Dion movie.
True.
Like, we saw the Celine
Dion. Yeah, it was kind of a limited release. Yeah. But even on DVD or whatever, I really think there's like, oh, this one worked, let's do this. Nobody seeing this movie is going to know.
And so they completely eliminate that. This is
There's no, are they going to make it in time for the show?
The point of this film is not to show you actual human behavior. The point of this movie is to show you five young guys who are having the time of their lives.
Right.
The narrative of fame in the past 10 to 15 years has been, oh, it's gross. It's gross to be famous, and everyone knows it. The famous people don't want to be famous. They don't want to be paparazzi. They don't want to be followed. They don't want to be annoyed. They don't want to be tracked down. They love that they're famous and rich and the people love them, but they want the people to stay away from them. It's not all it's cracked up to be being famous. It's you're in a box, etc., etc. Not so with this film. It's amazing to be famous in this movie. You get lots of money. You get to travel all over the world. People adore you. You can get on Twitter and say, everybody wear orange tonight to the show, and people obey you en masse. That's a good life. There is nothing going on wrong in that life. Yes?
Well, when you mentioned the narrative of fame, I was going to talk about there's also sort of the narrative of becoming famous, which is the sort of post-American Idol, pop idol thing of you can be just this regular schmo and then suddenly the hand of God in the form of Simon Cowell plucks you out of obscurity and there you go. And it gives people the idea in a lot of ways that it's about luck more than it's about anything else. It's not about talent or hard work or perseverance. It's literally just being in the right place at the right time.
And
opening the door.
The
when
guys in this film even say that they feel extremely lucky, which would make the people who follow things like The Secret and Oprah cluck their tongue at you and shake their finger at you and say, "Oh no, you weren't lucky.
You believe
the universe gave this to you."
Right.
Look, there are five other young men in England who can sing as well as these guys. I don't know who they are, but they exist.
Sure.
There are five young men in England in different towns doing different boring jobs or going to school who can sing. Had those guys shown up on X Factor audition day, it might have been a different guy.
Right.
It might have been five entirely different guys.
Because this is, for people who don't know, Simon Cowell did literally put this band together out of five sort of failed X Factor auditions.
Well, they weren't failed, but they didn't make it through to the cut, and he retrieved them, and that's part of the X Factor.
Right.
Rules that he can do, like any of the team leader people, they can be like, I pick this, he didn't make the cut, but I pick this person.
I see.
That's my understanding, anyway.
When they talk about their, this is something you asked about, and I now know the answer. When they
put tape over your mouth, keep going.
You asked about this, I'm telling you. They talk in the movie about going through boot camp.
Yes, that's X Factor.
That's an X Factor thing.
That's an X Factor thing. Okay. Yeah. So what this movie is about is how great it is to be in One Direction and how much they love you, the fans. And so I think it's an interesting movie because of that. I think that the idea that it's not a bad thing to eat cotton candy three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's the anti-supersize me. Like, you can have all of the stuff that you want, and it's going to be amazing.
And here,
all the time.
Let us serve it to you while you're on a unicorn.
Yeah. So I really am sort of fascinated by this movie and do not hate it. I think it's entertaining.
No, I had a good time.
I think it's interesting. The placement of Simon Cowell in the film. He shows up for the first 15 minutes, and then you never see him again. And that is because you don't want the devil hanging around.
You don't want that whiff of sulfur around.
Very long.
Nice
yes.
Boys.
You go off and make someone's wife pregnant. Like, that's your job. You sit back and collect the money and go impregnate your friend's wives. And we will now be in this band that people adore.
There were a couple things that a couple quibbles I have. Like I've rated this movie.
So
I like this movie.
I disagree with you in one way that having no negative stuff happen, having no never seeing them swear or have sex or drink or misbehave in any way, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that the construction of this movie is, here's what pop life should be. Pop music superstardom should be this wonderful thing all the time. And if you want to watch, you know, people melting down, go watch Katy Perry get divorced in the other movie. Go watch Elvis talk about, like, hookers in what's that? That's the Way It Is, I think. No. Go watch the Beatles break up in Let It Be. Like, you want that? Go watch
right,
that.
Right, but then is it a documentary?
I don't remember if Elvis talked about hookers. But he was not incredibly well-behaved in this one documentary about him, yeah.
But then is it a documentary or is it just, like, you know,
no, we said it wasn't a documentary.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's
an extension of reality television.
It's basically what's that Disney show? The
you're gonna have to narrow it down.
The one about the band, like the or Next Big Thing or something.
I don't know.
Anyway, one of those kid shows. I don't know. A couple of quibbles that I have. One is that for a band that's only been around since 2010, the movie does not do a particularly good job of explaining the passage of time. You know, I think we get several world tours that are edited to look like they're just one world tour.
It is not great with the chronology.
Yeah, at one point Niall says, oh, well, now we're recording our third album down the road. Like, I was like, wait, the third?
When did you put out the first one?
Yeah, I know. It was that's a buy. And then something I didn't really catch on to that Christy pointed out on What the Flick is that Zane is Muslim.
Yes.
A practicing Muslim.
Yes.
Probably, arguably, right now, pop culture's most famous
the
Muslim.
The world's most famous Muslim, yeah.
That might have been an interesting
avenue to
pursue.
That would have been interesting. I would have been interested in knowing about that.
Yeah. But no one cares. No one wants to talk about it. Yeah. But anyway,
and it would have been a good way for, like, you know, a person who is religious, you know, to present a reasonable version of that for the public, given the huge amount of anti-Muslim
sentiment
going on in the Western world.
And I'm sure if you're a Muslim 12-year-old, you can point to this guy and like, look,
Zane's a Muslim.
Yeah.
Shut up, leave me alone.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so yeah, this was a fun movie. I was not bored. I had a good time.
I think if anyone's going to get mad at me in my review, it's going to be about my use of the expression little girls, because every person at the screening was a little girl.
Yeah.
Like, they were. It was like the 10 and under was
right
at the screening.
This was a screening at 6 p.m.,
yeah,
which they're usually at least 7.
There was a 7, 7.30, yeah. This was the 6
this
o'clock.
This was an early bedtime screening.
Yeah. And
isn't there a Nick Lowe song, The Little Girls Know?
Understand.
The Little Girls Understand.
Something like that, yes. And that's, you know, when you're a middle-aged person, anyone under 20 is a child. And so... So, yeah, I mean, and they have fans of all ages from 10 to 22, perhaps.
Oh,
I don't know.
A male publicist we know.
Oh, really?
Big fan.
How old is this male publicist?
I'm guessing 30-ish.
Okay. Is this male publicist a gay?
Yes.
Okay, I mean, if you're a little gay boy, you're probably super into One Direction, too.
Sure.
You know,
no doubt.
Or a 30-year-old gay, almost man.
Gentleman. Anyway. All right. Also opening this week.
Nothing else. Goodbye.
There was Closed Circuit, the British movie with...
We can get this knocked out in 2 minutes.
It doesn't work.
Tell the plot.
Okay.
It's complicated, so just... Distill
right.
it down.
There's been a terrorist bombing in London. They've arrested a suspect.
A Muslim.
Yes, a Pakistani national. The trial involves super sensitive material, so much so that even the defendant isn't allowed to hear about it. So they assign him one lawyer to do the kind of public case and another lawyer to do the top secret case. Those two lawyers are forbidden from communicating with each other, but oops, they used to have an affair once. And now they're talking to each other again, and they are doing a really crappy job of hiding it, but the movie doesn't pay any attention to that because suddenly they are at the object of a government conspiracy and everyone's after them because it turns out that the suspect might have actually been something that we don't think that he was at first, and who can you trust, and who will die, and...
Boring. It goes higher up than you know.
Yes. Always.
It's, I'm sorry, I had a mouthful of donut there. They're all in on it.
You don't understand what you're dealing with.
You don't, yeah. You're playing a very dangerous game. And you've seen this movie before. Here's what's good about it.
Rebecca Hall.
The weather is what's good about it.
Is it convincingly British?
Oh, yeah, it sure is. This week in Los Angeles makes me yearn for the cold and the rain.
For damp.
Yeah. Mostly the cold. But, so the weather is really convincing. It's that blue-gray kind of filter on the camera. it's not just
sky.
It's not just England, but everything looks like that really gorgeous gray and blue and dark. I'm super into that.
Yeah, I always wonder about those British movies where it's constantly sunny. I'm thinking,
did you watch Downton Abbey? It's never raining.
Did you shoot for 100 days and just waited for the days when the sun came out?
No, seriously, you watch Downton Abbey, it is never raining.
Any Richard Curtis movie,
yeah, it's never raining. Yeah. And I thought Eric Bana was very good at being Eric Bana.
Sure.
He's, you know, square-jawed and solemn.
He's got the gray temples.
He's
now
doing it, yeah. He's a fine whatever.
I liked Ciarán Hinds.
Ciarán or Kieran? I think it's Kieran.
Maybe it's Ciarán Hinds.
It's Kieran, yeah. Rebecca Hall.
She's done.
Rebecca Hall's the only, like, you should watch Rebecca Hall even in a mediocre movie like this. Because she's terrific. She's not a household name yet.
She was in Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
She was in Please Give.
She was in Please Give.
Really terrific.
Talk about not household names.
She's basically a character actor.
Yeah.
But she could be a leading woman.
Oh, God. She was in that awful, awful gambling movie last year.
Yeah, whatever that was called.
Ugh. Anyway.
The one written by the woman who's, like, super brilliant and portrayed as a total bimbo in the film. Yeah. And she's so good that it makes me say to people, well, you know, you should watch her in this. There's a moment here in the movie where she looks at Eric Bana and she realizes that they're up against stuff they can't deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, we can't fight them, can we? We're not strong enough to fight them.
That's the one interesting gambit in this movie.
And you feel every ounce of her fear and this crushing weight of the futility of their task.
And in a conspiracy, political, paranoid thriller, nobody ever stops and says that.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says, I can't. They're going to kill me.
Like, yeah, exactly.
There's always this sort of unspoken thing. No, of course we're going to plod through and get them and
but
do the thing.
But she says the
she
thing.
She says out loud, we can't. No, we're in over our heads.
And he says, yeah, you're right. And you think, ooh, the movie's going to get interesting now. And then it doesn't. It is as if that conversation does not exist. They move right on through, and they start running and chasing. And
and then it ends in a way that suggests maybe it's going to be sort of gloomy and realistic, but then they sort of add on another coda that, nope, everything's going to be great.
There's all sorts of magical thinking going on in this movie, along with all the other movies that are about this very same thing, where, you know, I feel as though sometimes, and I said this in my review on movies.com, that this is sort of feels like a conspiracy movie that is part of a conspiracy to make you give up on the idea of fighting back against anything.
Right. You can't beat City Hall.
Yeah. So, okay, let's stop talking about it and go on to Getaway.
Yes, which I didn't see, but you
Which did. Is about Ethan Hawke as a former race car driver whose wife has been kidnapped at Christmas in Bulgaria by the Bulgarian State Television and Radio Women's Vocal Choir. Wouldn't that have been great? Le mystère de voix bulgaire.
So over the speaker, instead of getting instructions from John Voight,
kidnapped, yes.
It was coming from
this beautifully harmonic woman's choir telling him the instructions of what he has to do next. Your wife has been kidnapped by Le mystère de voix bulgaire.
Volume 2.
Volume 2 on 4AD records. To get her back, you must go to the fish market. Where the choir will sing a song about an argument in a fish market.
Then they will be interviewed by Terry Gross.
He has to steal a car, and he has to drive through Bulgaria very fast and run over everyone.
Mm.
And he does this, and most of them don't die, so that's how he stays. He gets to be a good guy still. All through the Christmas things, there's no reason for this to be a Christmas movie. I think it just happened to be shooting there
in the
December,
season.
Yeah.
Does he drive through any, like, Christmas markets?
Oh, yeah.
Through a creche?
Mm-hmm. Yes, all through the Christmas.
He just great.
Runs over, yeah. Then he picks up Selena Gomez, who's wearing a hoodie and basically acting like Eminem in 8 Mile. She has a gun. And she comes in and she's like, I'm going to kill you. Wait, I'm sorry. She doesn't say it like this. She goes, I'm going to kill you. Like, this is like, I'm this many. Like, there's not a moment where you think of her and you look at her, where you look at her and you think, oh, this is an adult woman who's dangerous.
Danger
gun.
Yeah.
No. He quickly takes the gun from her.
What else you got? Look, I was married to Uma Thurman. I don't scare anybody.
Yeah, and so the rest of the movie is him and her driving around trying to get the clues to save the wife from the disembodied voice on the speaker in the car that they've stolen. And the voice is John Voight, and he's being very Jigsaw, sort of like, you know, will you fulfill your potential and be the race car driver you were born to be to save your wife? Do or die, you know, and then it's like...
Meanwhile, she's hacking into bank vaults with an
iPad,
Selena
Gomez,
right?
Turns out to be a super hacker. She can take her iPad and hack into bank security systems, and she can short-circuit the cameras that are trained on them in the car to make sure they don't misbehave, and put their innocent driving behavior on an infinite loop.
Huh.
So when they're running around, you know, scheming, trying to get, you know, the things, it looks like they're driving.
Huh.
It is one of the worst films of the year. But there are so many car crashes, so much car chasing, and so many car crashes in this movie that I kept interested. I kept thinking,
there's enough mayhem for you.
How many more car crashes are there going to be? And there are tons of car crashes. Perhaps an infinite number of car crashes. There may still be cars crashing now.
You've gone home.
Production is over, but they're still crashing cars somewhere.
Isn't the shtick of this movie that it's not CG, that they're really crashing cars?
It looks like they're really crashing cars. I mean, I think all the budget was crashing the cars.
Mm.
But it's Bulgaria, so you get them cheap.
And Christmas markets, too, apparently.
It's real stupid. I like the car crashes. It's an idiot movie for idiots, but I was kind of an idiot for it. It's a rotten, terrible film that I really enjoyed.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I saw a really good movie that I really enjoyed, which is Short Term 12. It's an indie film about the people who work in a group home for troubled youth. It stars Brie Larson. She seems to be kind of the boss, and she is living with and having a relationship with one of the other guys, who is Jim from the newsroom, whose name I don't know. He's one of the Spring Awakening guys, something something Junior. Anyway, and you kind of come to find out, you know, you find out things about the kids, obviously, but also about the adults. Where Brie Larson, you learn more and more about her background and find out why she was sort of driven to go into this line of work, and to some extent. The guy, too, although he basically grew up in foster care but had these really great foster parents. There's a scene where they celebrate their 35th anniversary and all these foster kids of various, you know, ethnicities and genders are there to toast them. And obviously they were great foster parents. And whereas she, I think, had a more troubled childhood, but that sort of led her to want to help others out. It's very low-key. The filmmaker comes from a documentary background, and it's very much shot like a documentary. Like, I was sort of reminded of the Frederick Wiseman stuff that we've watched, just in terms of, you know, there's long takes, the camera gets up close, there's not a lot of music in the movie, and, it, you know, it feels like you're really observing the day-to-day, you know, workings of this children's, you know, group home. I found it really moving and, you know, oddly funny at times, really well acted. It's in very limited release, but I highly recommend that you seek out Short Term 12. Really, really good movie.
Terrific. I have no DVD recommendation this week.
My DVD recommendation, taking us back to our
because opening, I just forgot.
Taking us back.
Sorry.
Taking us back to our opening song is Spice World. Because if you have a band that's not really a band anyway, why make a documentary? Just write a movie for them.
Give them a lot of all-star guests.
Give them a fictional adventure. Create silly backstories that have nothing to do with their actual lives or the band's actual creation. And then, you know, give them a third act where they have to get to the Albert Hall on time in a double-decker bus that has to jump over a drawbridge.
I agree. I saw the S Club 7 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were chasing a mad scientist who had created S Club 7 clones.
Ooh.
Who were performing when they were like not performing, they were going to take their jobs from them. They had to go like get the mad scientist. I don't even remember the name of the S Club 7 movie, but I saw the S Club 7 movie.
I will dig it up and post a link on our Facebook
page. Yeah. It's no Spice World.
No.
I will tell you what
it is.
Yeah.
Any listener mail?
We have some listener mail. I'm going to read like two letters.
Okay.
That's it. Because I want to go have breakfast with our friends.
Yeah. It's a holiday, people. This is, you. No one's commuting on Monday, so you get a short episode this week, and next week we promise will be longer.
This is a letter from Douglas, who gave us the Kasingles.
Ah.
Subject line, cargo shorts. Alonzo and Dave, thanks for the great podcast. It is extremely entertaining when I'm traveling, which he does all the time for work, though I'm sure some people are concerned as I giggle on the plane or enjoying some quality downtime at home. I'm not going to talk about movies, though. Last week we mentioned cargo shorts and how they are the scourge of everything.
I'm wearing some right now.
I know you are. I enjoy some cargo shorts due to my work, but do not understand these shorts that go below the knees. I started calling them clam diggers or capri pants for men. I did a quick search and found an article about the differences between capri pants and clam diggers, not cargo shorts. It states that clam diggers fall into the cropped pants style.
Ah.
And then he gives a link to this article. I would like to go on the record to state that as one who enjoys wearing shorts, if they touch my knees, they are no longer shorts. Though I do not wish to return to 70s short shorts style.
Oh, he could rock a pair of Daisy Dukes.
That's what I'm wearing right now. I'm wearing some short shorts right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a thong.
And yes. And shall be referred to now as cropped pants. There's only one man that has no problem pulling off the cropped pants style, in my opinion, and he is the Hulk. Not Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Thanks, Douglas.
I will say, even though I like cargo shorts, I can promise you there's one thing that I will never, ever, ever wear.
What?
A utility-kilt.
Why in God's name would you wear one of those?
Anyway? I wouldn't. That's what I'm telling you.
Forget it. I'm not going to even discuss
these. I was thinking of the whole knee issue.
These are not even the point of discussion.
There are people that wear this stuff, and I'm not ever wearing a utility-kilt. I just want to put it out there in the world.
Here's another letter. Gents. Which is what we are. I'm a little behind on the podcasts. I blame that guest spot on the B-Movies podcast. So I just heard about this contest. And if it's still open, here's my entry.
Ah, this was the contest that we had to win the miniature Annabelle from The Conjuring.
Yeah. I have two small children. A terrifying doll from hell may be just the thing to scare them away from the guest room so they don't keep going in there to jump on the bed. It will also ensure that guests will never stay too long. Well, that's a good letter, but you lose because you were late.
Yeah, sorry.
And while I'm writing, Dave made a comment on the B-Movies podcast that left me wondering, is there a story about seeing Rugrats in Paris and having an epiphany that kids will touch your stuff because they totally will? Your pal and fan, James.
Thank you, James.
Didn't we tell the Rugrats story on this very show?
I think we've told it, yeah.
The short version is, for people who haven't heard it, we went to the Rugrats in Paris for a press screening. There were a million little children there all running around. I saw this adorable, like, three-year-old little girl with, like, curly hair, and she had this big grin on her face, just running up the aisle, spinning around in a circle the way little tiny children do when they're so excited they don't know what else they're supposed to be doing with themselves. And I looked at her, and I pointed her out to you, and I said, oh, look at the little girl. And you looked at me with the dead eyes of a dead-souled person, and you said, it would touch our stuff. And I knew you were right, and I knew that we would never have another conversation about having children ever again. That was the end of it.
I admire the people that we know who have had kids, have adopted kids. Not me.
Before we go, we have another giveaway.
Yes, we do. So you'll be glad that you listened to this truncated holiday show.
Perhaps you saw on the internet a couple weeks ago the picture of me wearing a wolf mask that was given to me at the press screening of Your Next. It is a big hard molded plastic mask.
With an elastic band.
With an elastic band. And it's the greatest piece of movie swag I've ever been given in my life. And yet, there's nothing I can do with it other than pose for one picture that got put on the internet. And it's certainly not going to clutter up my home for the rest of my life. And I'm not selling it on eBay because that's unethical if you're a journalist. Although I've seen them going on eBay for like $50 a pop, so
yeah. But we went to a screening that was also like regular folks, so I'm sure right. a lot of regular folks got.
No, yeah, of course, that's what they did. They yeah. flipped them right away. We're giving ours away
for free.
For free, it's the neck. It's it. There were two different styles of masks that they were giving out that night: the sheep masks and the wolf masks.
Weren't there three styles in the movie?
I think there were just two.
Where there were three guys wearing masks.
I don't remember, but this is a wolf mask.
Okay.
And it's terrific. It can be yours for the same thing, the same process as the Conjuring doll. I'm a big fan of the essay contest. I like people to write me nice sentences. I like them to say nice words to me. I like punctuation and proper usage. That's what's going to happen.
50 words.
50 words or less. This is short. Two sentences. Three, maybe.
And don't go leaving it on our Facebook wall.
No, do not. You do not do that or you'll be disqualified.
Email your entries to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. 50 words or less. Why you need the wolf mask from Your Next. Be creative.
We will announce the winner on next week's show, so get your...
If we remember.
Yes. So get your entries to us no later than midnight Pacific time on Saturday, September 7th.
Sure.
Or 11:59 p.m. Saturday, September 7th.
Whatever time zone you live in. Yeah.
Pacific time.
Unless you're like in Australia or something. But if you're in Australia or whatever, don't enter because it's going to cost $30 to mail you this mask. Postage to these far-flung countries is insane.
It's crazy.
So, yeah.
So there. As always, we thank you for listening. We send you over to check out our friends out there. See what's happening at ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Matt Atchity and Gray Drake at Rotten Tomatoes Radio on Sirius XM. Listen to Frank and Doria on Sirius XM. Listen to Derek and Romaine on Sirius XM. Also, check out Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this program for free on iTunes, and if you want to leave us a positive review, that would be great. Please leave us a positive review. It's been a while. We could use some more. You can stream the show at StitcherRadio.com or TheLounge.com. Like us on Facebook, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com. And once again, our email is LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. Send us your top 10 list, your worst 10 list, your essay entries to win the Your Next Mask, comments, questions. Last but not least,
what?
Check out linoleum-knife.com.
Yeah, do that, because this week there's going to be a whole bunch of more new stuff on it. We're done soft launching.
Yeah, slowly but surely we're turning this thing into a site that you need to be visiting several times a day. So
7 or 8 or 12 times a day.
So do so. Happy Labor Day. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.